Welcome back. I'm Zaylee. I'm speaking today with Peter Simonson, Executive Director of the ACLU New Mexico. He'll be holding a virtual town hall meeting this evening on the implications of the recent ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act. In the cafe here, I'm also joined by Rose Griego and her partner, Kim, Kyle, actually, and another couple. These two have filed a lawsuit in Albuquerque District Court to be able to get married. They are represented by the ACLU, among other organizations. So thank you all. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So last week was a big week for gay and lesbian rights when the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, struck down as unconstitutional key part of the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, that denies federal benefits to same-sex couples who legally married in the states where they reside. Peter Simonson, can you tell us a little bit more about this victory and explain the implications of the decision, especially here in New Mexico?
Well, generally, the ruling affects Section 3 of the Defense of Marriage Act, which is a federal law that prohibited the federal government from recognizing the marriages of same-gender couples for purposes of any sorts of federal benefits or protections or entitlements that people might get under federal programs. There are some 1,100 places in federal laws and programs where being married makes a difference, anything from eligibility for family medical leave to Social Security survivors benefits to access to health care for a spouse, just numerous places where being recognized as married under federal law can be beneficial. And so the court overturned DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, on equal protection grounds, and it now sets in motion a process whereby the Attorney General for the United States, Eric Holder, is writing new rules to comply with the DOMA decision, with the decision in the Windsor case, and ultimately those will determine how New Mexico couples who may have been married in other states can access those federal benefits that flow from the Windsor decision. And I guess, you know, the key issue here, of course, is that it's more critical than ever that we clarify here in the state of New Mexico the ability of same-sex couples to marry. And so the lawsuit, the litigation that we brought, seeks to achieve that very end, ensuring that gay and lesbian couples in our state have the guaranteed right to get married.
And right now there are 13 states where it's legal, correct? And this overturning the victory means that the federal government will recognize the married same-sex couples who live in all these same states, in these 13 states, correct?
At least those couples, exactly. At least the couples living in those states. I think the open question right now is couples who married in those states but now live in other states, and particularly in states like New Mexico, where we in fact are the only state in the country that has no laws either prohibiting or recognizing same-sex relationships under law. You know, what is the status of them for purposes of the federal government? And I think there's a strong argument to be made that if New Mexico couples that were married in other states should qualify, that the federal government should recognize them based on the place where they married, not the place where they reside, and therefore that they should qualify for those federal programs.
And now there is another case being filed by Brian Egolf and Kate Furlick on behalf of a Santa Fe couple who tried to gain a marriage license here. How does your legal case differ from that one?
Well, our lawsuit follows the conventional path that you know, organizations typically have followed in trying to achieve the freedom to marry. It is a lawsuit asking our state courts to declare that to deny marriage licenses to same-sex couples is discrimination under the Equal Protection Clause of our state constitution. What Egolf and Furlick have filed is what's called a writ of mandamus that asks the court, and now the state Supreme Court directly, to declare that county clerks have no discretion under law, that the law allows no discretion but for county clerks to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. And so, you know, both of the lawsuits in practical terms, would accomplish much the same thing. In legal terms, our litigation would obtain a ruling about the question of discrimination, the question of fairness under our state constitution, and ultimately it's the language from that litigation could ultimately be beneficial in other contexts where people are discriminated against on the basis of sexual orientation that do not really have to do with relationship recognition.
Now, Rose and Kim, how did you two become involved in this specific case?
Well,
we'll start with Rose.
We were involved in this for many years now, and in 2010, we testified in front of the legislature for the domestic partnership that bill that was up at that time, and so we did it on behalf of Equality New Mexico at the time. And so they liked what we said. They liked our presence. And so when the ACLU came up with their lawsuit, they chose us as one of the litigants.
And you, in your testimony before the legislature in 2010, you spoke of your sister's death as one of the reasons why you would want to be legally married. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, that was interesting because it kind of made you realize this isn't just a gay thing. It's about relationships, and it's about what you consider family. And so my sister, who died unexpectedly in a car crash, her boyfriend or fiancé, who they've been living together 8+ years, had absolutely no rights when she died. And that was just a big eye-opener because, you know, he didn't have access to bank accounts, had, you know, couldn't even claim her body at the funeral home, so, or at the morgue. So that is when Kim and I immediately went down to our lawyer and wrote up all our domestic partnership papers. And this is what we actually carry around on a jump drive just in case of something happening. So, you know, we don't ever want to be in that position of not having full rights. And this is the exciting part about, you know, DOMA being struck down is that, you know, it's not just about what happens in our state. It's also what happens, you know, when we're outside of our own state. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the push forward now to get it to be in every state and recognized federally is so important.
Well, that definitely begs the question as well. If it's recognized in some of these states and, say, a couple travels out of state and has an accident, and Peter, maybe you're the best one to answer this, can the documents, for example, that Rose and Kim have be recognized? I mean, would one partner have the rights to be in the hospital room? Because that's very often some of the struggle.
Well, of course, I don't know what Kim and Rose actually have on their jump drive. It's amazing, and it's unfortunate that they have had to actually tote around a hard drive with legal documents that they've had prepared just to make sure that in any situation their rights might actually be recognized. But that is the those are the lengths to which couples in our state have had to go to try and protect themselves. You know, if those are legally guaranteed contracts, then indeed, wherever they travel, those contracts should be respected. But you know, short of that, and of course, many couples can't pay to have attorneys provide those sorts of elaborate legal arrangements. Couples are sort of at the mercy of the person who's attending them, the physician or whoever it might be, and maybe trying to prevail on their sense of goodwill to allow them to have those kinds of rights in those moments. But short of that, couples don't have those sorts of protections.
But even if they have those documents in a state, for example, New Mexico at this point, that does not legally recognize their marriage, is it still valid?
Well, again, if they are powers of attorney, or if they are living wills that that Kim and Rose have completed, then those are legally binding arrangements, and they should be respected. You know, again, the bigger question is where couples haven't had those arrangements made, and let's keep in mind that as I mentioned earlier, there are some 1,100 places in federal law where rights are guaranteed by the contract of marriage. Rose, I believe it was, or I can't remember if it was Kim or Rose speaking, but they mentioned they're testifying at the legislature for the domestic partnership legislation. Ultimately, our work around that bill resulted in a bill that tried to identify every place in state law where marriage was mentioned and a right was conferred, and the bill wound up being several hundred pages long. So there are many, many places where being married makes a difference, and ultimately I don't think couples can replicate those rights and responsibilities legally. They can try to achieve some of them. They can go to an attorney and try to lock down the most important ones through legal arrangements, but to cover the full gamut of rights and responsibilities that are created by the contract of marriage is virtually impossible. As I say, that's to say nothing of the cost that it represents for a couple.
Right. So in Santa Fe in April, they passed a measure supporting same-sex marriage, which was largely symbolic. But it was during testimony there that Rebecca Wurzberger also referred to these 1,100 or so different benefits that married couples would receive that gay lesbian couples would not necessarily. And that was really shocking to me, how many. So this is really a question of fairness. And can one or all three of you discuss some of the access that married couples have that gay lesbian couples who live perfectly similar lives in, you know, marriage, home, children, etc.?
Well, the interesting thing is that it's all those everyday little things that you don't think about, that you take for granted, that we have to actually consciously think about. So we own a home together, we have children together, we have, you know, health insurance. That's even just a simple thing that nobody ever thinks about. So several years ago, I had an employer who was from out of state, so they were from California, so they had some great benefits. So they had domestic partner benefits and immediately signed Kim up for my insurance plan. But then, of course, most people don't realize that not only did I have to prove that we were a domestic partnership, so in that case, our legal papers did come in handy, but then I thought, how many married people have to come in with their marriage certificate to prove that they're married? They just check off a box that says spouse. And then the other piece was that most people don't know this, but I got taxed as a benefit income, like the premiums that I was paying for Kim was actually a taxable benefit to me. So that added, you know, several thousand dollars to my, you know, gross income. So it's all those little things that add up, you know, into those 1,100 benefits that married people take for granted. And so it's not so much that we want, you know, special rights or anything like that. We really do want the same rights, right, as everyone else without having to jump through all these hoops like us having, you know, we're lucky. We're very lucky that we had the ability to go to a lawyer and, you know, had the presence of mind to think of all these protections that we can put in place. So, but not everybody, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, the 25-year-old couple who, you know, that's the last thing on their mind. And, you know, and then maybe the next year they have a baby and they think, oh, we're fine. But then what if something happens to one of them, you know? And that's not something they think about at that age, you know?
And this is also the specific legal aspect. There's also the indirect kind of emotional, the shame. They brought that up in the court, right, ruling on children of, right, the parents not being legally recognized.
And I might just add that in the DOMA case, the plaintiff in that case, Edie Windsor, really had just sort of the epitome of circumstances affecting her. She had been she and her partner had been together for over 40 years, and only in the last couple of years of their life together had they actually been married under New York state law. When her partner died, she left all sorts of property to Edie, and she received a federal estate tax bill of over $360,000 that she wouldn't have been charged if she'd actually been legally married to her partner, or at least if her marriage had actually been recognized under federal law. But I think, you know, Ellie, you started to get to the question that I think is really at the heart of this. And while I think all of us want to see same-sex couples enjoy the benefits and the rights and the protections and the entitlements that you get under both federal and state law, at the end of the day, it's really about loving, committed couples being able to share their relationship together publicly, for that relationship to be recognized by their community, by the public, and in fact by the government. And I think when it really gets down to it, it's about the sanctity of that relationship and those couples simply wanting to be treated like all other couples are treated in our country, fairly, and to have their relationships recognized and respected.